This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2023, held at Pleasant View School in Arcola, Illinois, on March 3 and 4.
Greet you in the name of the Master Teacher that said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me." Not many people of you know me. They say, picture's worth a thousand words. That's our family. Red, brown, yellow, black, and white. Personalities from Tigger to Eeyore. This morning I'm asked to speak on the troubled student from a parent perspective. The stories that I'm going to be telling some stories, giving you some illustrations. These stories are not to try to get pity or sympathy from you, but rather to encourage you that we can walk beside each other with these troubled children. Now remember, Anthony said this topic is, my assignment is a parent's perspective. Not understanding the troubled student, the correct perspective. And in a little bit here, we're going to have a forum, and you're going to have the opportunity to correct the parent, and it's 300-1, so you know who's going to win. It's pretty obvious. But I'm going to give you a parent's perspective from my perspective, and there's other parents here that may have a different perspective than I do. I talked to quite a few parents while we were in preparing for this that have gone through this, and this is common to a man. This is not unique to me. This is not unique to you. Let me throw out a scenario to begin with, get you thinking. Teacher's sitting at her desk. It's been a challenging week. Charlie seemed to be continually going downhill. Today it was uncooperation, taking his shoes off, and when I asked him to put his shoes back on, he kicked one across the room. The math facts that he knew so well yesterday seemed to have left his brain, or at least that's what he's saying. He acts like he doesn't know them. He knew him yesterday. I don't know why he doesn't know him today. The many punishments that both the teacher and the principal have given have seemed to be evading the biblical directive of what a rod is supposed to do. He had been the main subject in countless faculty meetings, after school discussions, board meetings. I'm up to my eyeballs. In fact, I'm about ready to cry. And then I hear someone at the door, and in walks Mama Bear. Have you met Mama Bear? I'm Mama Bear this morning. And that is the crux of the discussion. The Mama Bear versus school administration. And why does it get to that point? Why do we get there? That's what we want to find out. But I do want to quickly say that if Mama Bear doesn't protect the troubled student and love the troubled student, who's going to? So let's let Mama Bear do that. But we need to work together. I got 30 minutes. And I don't know how many of you have worked with troubled students, but I think you probably worked hours without a conclusion. And I'm supposed to come up with something in 30 minutes. So we're going to have to hurry. Understanding the troubled student. I'm going to give you three stories to begin with, short stories. The interesting thing is I don't know how to go about this thing, but we're just going to get our plow on the ground and start plowing. And if I find enough fertile ground at the end of this talk, I'm going to plant a seed. In July, we were at a meeting together, and Shepherd's Pathway told me something that I never knew before, and that is that they work with 2/3 biological, 1/3 adopted. This troubled student is not, it is common to man. I'm going to give you three stories. I'm going to give you one adopted story, two biological stories to make it work with them. So the first one is, it's going to be adopted. It's my son. It's hard to hide that while I'm going through here. So Chad was born to a mother in prison, born in the hospital, sent home to a mother. Anthony, can someone go back to my briefcase back there? I have some broken plates in there. Could you bring them up to me? It's back there in the ante room before the bathroom. Thank you. So he was taken out, put in a place in a home, mother said, I'm not going to mother this child. I'm going to put him up for adoption. We had the child at 6 weeks old. He grew up doing great. Typical child. This is number 10 child for us. So this is not a new rope for us. A one-year-old, mother gets out of jail, goes to a halfway house, and the counselor said, you can mother this child. You can. So counselor calls my wife, says, we're going to try for her to mother the child. We want you to bring the child in and try, leave him here with her for half a day to try to test drive this thing. So we do that. We go into Erie, drop off the halfway house, and leave. My wife goes around through town trying to kill time. 3 hours later, the counselor calls, and my wife can hear this screaming in the background. And she said, come and get the child. He has been screaming for 3 hours. We go pick up the child, Chad, take him home, and that boy is changed. Not at all the same. He has gone from a happy, contented, cheerful boy, thank you, to a insecure mess. When my wife is in the kitchen washing dishes and she knows to go to the laundry to get a new dish towel, she leaves, he's right behind her. When she goes anywhere, wherever she is, he is right with her. He needs to be with her all the time. My wife's practice has been to, after dinner, she lays down in the living room floor, gets a storybook that the preschoolers lay down with her, and she reads them a story, and they fall asleep, and that's their nap. And she often takes a nap with them, and she'll wake up and go about her duties. After this, he woke up screaming because mom wasn't there. Where is mom? Trauma. This is the trauma. Fast forward 6 years, and we have a troubled boy in school. Why? Story number one. Story number two. I talked to this dad on the way up here, and he gave me permission to use his illustration. His boy was 10 years old, biological boy, doing great, doing really good in school, excellent student. His oldest brother in his 20s was killed instantly in an accident. Through the drama of the funeral and all that went on, they were out of school for a week or so, went to go back to school, and this boy couldn't go to school. They tried to force him. They tried. He talked to me for half an hour. I only got a minute here to tell you that the things that he went through was just the same thing we went through. That biological, solid 10-year-old boy had hit trauma, and he changed. He was changed. Now we went from a solid student to a troubled student because of the trauma. Some of the things he said, one of the things that stuck out to me most, he was a man that's black and white. He's a bishop. He's black and white. This is right, this is wrong. There's no question asked. And law is very much part of his life. He said, law did not work with that boy. He said, I tried it, and on a second spanking, when that panic was in this boy's eyes, he knew he was on the wrong track. And he quit, thankfully. Not all of us did. I didn't. I didn't quit like he did. I went longer than him. Parents get desperate. Him and his wife got desperate. What do we do? This boy needs to be in school. We can't put him in school. Yeah, became desperate. It ended up deteriorating into health problems. The boy got Lyme's. He got COVID. But they found answers. And some of you here helped him. Now that boy, he told me that boy is in school. Going good. They're a long journey, a long story to get to there, but he's there. Third boy I want to tell you about is a boy, same thing. Second child of the family, older sister, great family, loves his dad. His dad is his hero. His dad had a plane wreck. Plane belly flopped. Dad's in the hospital. Is he going to live or isn't he? Finally, they got over that crux and he was going to live, but his back was compressed so bad that he is not sure if he's even going to be able to walk from this day on. Again, the boy changed. He was only two or three, I believe. I should have asked the age. I'm going to call him a three-year-old boy. Typical. come about. Now he has to know where dad is, where mom is. If dad is going to go upstairs, he says, is anybody going to get me? This boy is now, it's 7 years ago, this boy is 10, 11 years old. He still asks, is somebody going to get me if dad's going to go upstairs? This is our own house. Trauma changes children. What are some of the earmarks of this, or what happens to a trauma child? I am no authority. I'm just gleaning thoughts and ideas and things that I've observed and others have observed and shared with me. The first thing that is trauma children squelch memory. They don't want to remember that trauma. Whatever that trauma was, they don't want to remember. And let me back up. I didn't have these when I needed them, but I have them now. Back to the adopted child. I want to clear up one thing, misconception that we have had over the years. So we think that this child, this newborn child, this is mom, this is birth mom, this is birth the child. And we think that if a child is sent into our home at birth, everything's going to be fine. Is that right? That birth mother is torn away from that child, and the very sincere, very loving, compassionate adoptive mother takes this child in his heart and binds with them, but the pieces don't quite fit. The heartbeat is different. The voice is different. The birth mother might have been a very calm lady. The adoptive mother is a very active lady. There's so many things different that the child nor the mother even know, but the pieces don't quite fit. But as time goes on, and relationships are built, and love is used, they can come together. But there will always be a mark. And let's remember that. Now may I move on. Pray for me. I study this, and it's a burden to me, and I'm struggling with my emotions. So, trauma children squelch memory. What do we do in school? How do we learn? Memorization is such a key element of education. We learn yesterday. Those math facts that teacher was talking about before Mama Bear come in, those math facts, that was memorization from yesterday today. He's remembering them. You take a trauma child, that is squelching memory. And Anthony had a very good talk. If you've never heard his talk on the brain, find a way you can listen to it. The brain is kind of a muscle. The more we exercise a certain part, the more it grows. The more we squelch a certain part, the more it shrinks. And this memory is being shrunk, and so they're learning. That boy, that 10-year-old boy that was growing up in a good student, all of a sudden his education deteriorated because his memory was being squashed. That is one of the things that happens. Personality and temperaments do contribute to how a child reacts and responds to trauma. That is why you can have one child, exact same history, child B, exact same history, react differently because personalities. I let problems run off my back. If something comes up, I can let them run off my back. My wife doesn't. She thinks about them and thinks through them, and 2 days later she'll bring them up and I'll probably have forgotten about it, but not her. And that is a difference in personality. So different personalities will come, and that's why you'll have a different reaction to a very similar background. Control. So this child has been through trauma. Our daughter, Janelle, was torn from her mother at birth, put into a very loving adoptive home. Her mother loved her and did just pour herself into her children. She died of a heart attack, and generally the only one that found her. And then her family asked us to take her into her home. Now she has two trauma experiences in her history. And what does a child do when they have trauma? They don't want trauma again. If you've been through trauma, you don't want it again, so you start to take control. You think that if you can control the situations, you're going to control them. And they subconsciously think this. They're not even really rationalizing it. But they try to control the situation so that this isn't going to happen again. And they become very controlling. And it can almost, from an observer, be a life or death matter. look like it from them. And it is to them. It is a life or death matter. One of the things we as parents and teachers make mistakes at, so our child, the child here is just thinking wrong. You know, they're thinking wrong, they're talking wrong. And we tell them what to do, what to think, what to say. With a child, and I borrowed this from an FBI agent that worked with hostage situations. Questions are more productive than answers. Why is that? And at first it hit me, and I had to think through it, and he helped me think through it. If I ask you a question, so we got a situation here, and I ask you a question to help you get, my child's thinking wrong. And I tell him, you're not supposed to think like this, you need to think like this. Is he going to buy that? Maybe, maybe not. If I ask him a question that he has to think through and answer me this thought, is he going to buy it? Yes, because he has thought through it. But there's one question that is off limits, and that is any question that begins with why. That's what the FBI agent, they never use a why question when relating to a hostage situation. And this is different in a sense, but it is very similar. And as I thought through that, why questions, why are you doing that? They may answer you, but they don't know why they're doing it. They know less maybe than you know why they're doing it. So that is an unfair question. Ask them what and how questions. Questions that help them to think through where they're at and to guide them with questions over to the right answers. A thought that others have helped me come up with. Suspension. How many of your schools have had experienced suspension? How many have had expelled? Is there a difference? Remember, this is parents' perspective, so you're going to have to straighten me out later. I am of the opinion that a suspension is okay. Expelling is not. Is there a difference? To me, a suspension is, there is a situation here that is getting pretty intense. Maybe the teacher needs respite. Maybe the board needs to back up and regroup and figure out what we're going to go from here, but we just need a little bit of time to get our act together. Maybe the student needs, and maybe there's danger. Sometimes we have situations where we're not sure about the safety of the school. And so there's a little questionnaire, so we need a little space. A suspension, in my mind, is a removing the student from the school for a short period of time, immediately followed by a path back to school. And that is what we need. From a parent's perspective, we need that. If our child is being suspended from school, our next question is, what is the path back to school? And as the board, the administrators, make that choice to suspend this child, in that very discussion, you need to be discussing what is the path. So we're going to suspend this child, but now what is the path to bring that child back to our school? There is a nail in our school for every student, and we need to keep it that way. Now, I'm painting with a pretty wide brush here, and I hope you forgive me for that. But we really want to get our children back in school, just as much as you want them back in. Gerald's talk laid tremendous bedrock for what I'm going to be talking about. And one of the things he did or said, and I'm going to reiterate a little bit, is boards communicate with us all the time. There is a part of boards, we talked about it in the board meeting yesterday, that there's confidentiality. When a board is discussing things, we don't just spread it around because there is feelings and persons we're talking about. But when we have a troubled situation, there's an exception to the rule in my mind. There needs to be transparency, like Gerald was talking about. A transparency. There was times in our situation where it would go a month. We knew there was an elephant in the room. It would go a month and the parents didn't know what's happening. The board was discussing it. Teachers were discussing it. They had a plan, but we had no idea what. Be transparent. Be open. probably in this situation, we can even err on the side of being too transparent. And open, and be open with your feelings. There's a kind way to do it. There needs to be kindness through it all. But be open. There's another thought that comes through from the administrator. I've served on the board too. We can sense that if the parents aren't behind the school's plan, they're not supportive of the school. There's also the thought that this child comes to school. I meant to say this earlier, but when this child comes to school and all of a sudden he becomes a troubled student, we got a home problem. There's things not cool. They didn't do their work at home. That's the first thing that comes. That's not natural to us to think that. When the reality is that that child probably had more blood, love, sweat, tears, spankings, effort, time put into it than the teacher's pet. And I use the teacher's pet for emphasis, not disdain. That child likely had a lot of effort put in by those parents. Let's at least give that the benefit of the doubt, that likely is what happened. With a troubled child, structure is very important. We talked about that control situation back there. Structure is so important for that child to know what's coming around the corner. If they know that they're going to get to school and what's going to happen the whole way through school, there's no surprises. They can relax their control because they already know what's happening. But if they get to school on Monday and this happens, and in our Christian day schools, and then 2 o'clock in the afternoon something changes, and it throws them for a curve, and it's just me. Be informative to them if that's something like that happens. Let them know ahead of time. Our Christian day schools, it's hard to do that. I understand that. We have a fluid classroom more so than a large school. Large school has to be a little bit more rigid, and smaller school can be a little more fluid. But with a troubled student, fluidity, if that's even a word, is a detriment. They switch to their control side if it becomes that. Relationships. Sometimes, in our situation, the relationship between student and parents was very, very typical of any child. When we got to school, that's when the things started to happen, and we didn't even expect the parents. But sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes the troubled student and the parents are odds, and the student will ally with a teacher. If you find that the case in your situation, please do all you can to promote that parent to the parents to that student. You have a unique opportunity to do that the parents can't do. The parent is already at odds with this child. They have work, and they have to grapple with this. They have to live with this child 24/7. You have a unique opportunity as a child developing trust in you to woo that child back to the parents. Because once school's over, they're going back to the parents. And if things start going better there, it's going to start going better at school, more than likely. Love and understanding are inseparable. Someone already said that this weekend. If we're going to be successful with these challenge students, love and understanding need to be in place. And what is that understanding? So invest in that child. There was a teacher in Kentucky that had a child that was just extremely troubled student. And the parents of that child there was a relationship between the board and the teachers and the parents that was very good. The parents chose to take that child to a Nancy Thomas camp for the summer, for 2 weeks in the summer. That teacher packed up his wife and child and went along with that boy to camp for 2 weeks. Talk about investment. I don't even have to tell you where that story ended. That story ended in success. And it doesn't always. That teacher could have invested all that, and it might have not turned out good, but in that situation it did. But be willing to invest, and Gerald mentioned that. Invest in the child. Don't always take the short route. To me, expelling is a short route. You know what? We just can't handle this. We're going to expel this child, and we can go on to school. Well, school like it's supposed to be. That's the short route. The long route, the Christ-like route, is to be willing to take that time and invest in these children. Suffer the children that come unto me, and forbid them not. Yesterday I was discussing with a board member a very tough situation that they are facing. And he told me that the teacher got books and started studying about the problem that this child had. That teacher, I salute her. She is willing to invest in that child. And that child is so much further ahead to be able to find success when a teacher is trying to understand the child. That's the love and the understanding coming together there. She loves him enough that she wants to understand him, and she is willing to put herself in to do that. Now, at the risk of losing the load I've just loaded on the truck, I'm going to put this thing in reverse and pop the clutch. Last weekend, my wife and I were in the Grand Oregon, visited with Aunt Grace. She's 92 years old. She's not my aunt, but we grew up knowing her in Dutchess, Alberta. I grew up in Dutchess, Alberta. Uncle Ken and Aunt Grace. She told me something that I didn't know, that Uncle Ken, he would be 92 now, so you can do the math. When he was 4 years old, his mother died. His dad kind of lost his moorings, and not with the church wife, but emotionally and the ability to raise four boys, and so he farmed the boys out to family. Uncle Ken was in four different homes till he got married. And his trauma, we just talk about trauma, what trauma does to a child. Uncle Ken had trauma. As I knew Uncle Ken, he was a gentle giant. I worked for him. He had a fertilizer plant in town there. We lived right on the edge of town. Dad needed work for boy. And so I would go help Uncle Ken load fertilizer bags. He called me Tater. He was a gentle giant. There was a man that ran around. Every town has these men in town that are kind of unique, maybe a little bit simple. Roy Blair was the one for Dutchess. And Uncle Ken always had time for Roy Blair. He'd come cruising in there on his moped, and Uncle Ken would get him to shovel on corn he would give him some work and pay him a bit to do it. And Uncle Ken was a gentle giant. I didn't know about his trauma. Why didn't it affect his later life? Story number two. In Rosemary, 10 miles from where I grew up, there was in 1970s, when I was about 10, I was there, so that would have been about 79, we went to visit this 80-year-old couple, and they told us this story. When his wife was six, her parents both were killed, died, and I forget why they died, but they both died. She was orphaned, no family around in southern Alberta, so she went to the neighbors, said, we'll take her in. They went to live with the neighbors. Fast forward, that's about 12 years, and the boy in this home goes to dad and says, Dad, I'd like to court this girl. She's been kind of his sister up till now. I want to court this girl. Dad said, okay, you go live with Uncle Joe, and you can start courting. And they got married. And we visited them when they were 80 years old. And that lady was a mother in Israel at Rosemary. But she had trauma. How did she turn out right? I have some observations, and you can take them and you can discuss it later if you want to. Number one, the school culture was not nearly as progressed in those days as it is today. And I say that not as a positive, but just as a fact. In the 70s, when I went to school on the third year that Christian Day Schools were established in Dutchess, out of the public schools. We didn't have the curriculum we have today. The teachers didn't have the TIs. The board didn't have CASB to come to. There wasn't a support system. So our schools were a lot more simple. Reading, writing, arithmetic, we're okay with that. They get that through school, we're okay with that. And therefore, the troubled student had a better chance in an environment like that, where the efficiency and the drive to learn as much as we possibly can wasn't there. I grew up in a school where we had a Down syndrome boy all my grade years, Brian Lershell. He was part of us. He was very limited. Down syndrome had a pretty wide spectrum. He was very limited. He was verbal. We could talk, but he was part of us. When it was time to play ball and he was up to bat, we gave him 8 strikes. Is that okay? Yes, it was okay. And if he didn't get it on strike number 7, maybe a 9 grader will go up there and reach around and help him get a base hit, and he'd run for first base, and when he made it, everybody would cheer. He was part of us. We learned that sometimes we have to walk slower because Brian's walking beside us. Maybe in class we had the ace student would have to not be able to get teacher help because she was spending time with Brian. But it's okay. And it affected how I look at challenged, mentally challenged children from that day on. I have a different outlook of them. Another thing is, there was community back then. No cell phones. If you want to discuss something about anything school-related, about the troubled boy in school, you had to have a face-to-face conversation. We think sometimes that, you know, somebody can send me a message, and then I can think about it and digest it, and I can send that back a better message. But that's at the compromise of everything that is gleaned by a face-to-face conversation. They didn't have email and faxes. The only way available was communication. And we know that that is so key. Another difference, I think, is that the children worked hard back then, comparison to today. I don't know how many of you grew up with a ringer washer or ran clothes through the ringer washer, and then maybe after that you had to run through the spinner. Well, that was duties for boys when I was young. There was a lot of more of those kind of opportunities for boys and girls to work and be busy. And God designed us to be happy when we're busy. We're designed that way. If we have loitering, nothing to do, it runs out after a while. It's okay for a day or two, but after a while it runs out. When you have a boy that has been traumatized and has nothing to do, you're adding fuel to the fire, so to speak. If you could put that boy in a ringer washer and a spinner, and my dad, we had a pretty big yard, and my brother and I talked to my dad about buying a rider. No, we have two push mowers. It's fine. We push mowers. My brother and I would sit there dreaming of how this big mower, building a big mower, could come down and mow it every 2 weeks. And but it was healthy for us. It helped us. Well, I said I'm going to plant a seed. I told Anthony I'm going to plant a seed, not grind my axe, so I'm going to try to keep it that way. In July, we had a meeting in Myerstown. There was about 30 people. Gerald was there. Anthony was there. I don't know, there was Mike and some other. Another man was there on Skype. And the purpose of that meeting was, maybe I should back it up. So let's just say this school has a troubled student, and you're trying to grapple with this troubled student. What do we do with it? Where are we going to go? What can we do? We've tried this. We've tried that. We've tried the next thing, and it's not working. But none of us know that Grandin, Missouri school 3 years ago had the very similar situation and found a solution, and it's working. But this school has happened to reinvent the wheel that Grandin invented 3 years ago. And the seed I want to plant today is, how can we take all the Anabaptist experience and have it available in some way or form so that when we face that, when our back is up against the wall, that we have access to, you know what, they learned this over there. We can call them. Maybe they don't have the answer, but they at least can tell you what didn't work, what they learned along the way, and get some answers, get some help. Sometimes all it takes is one nugget to nudge you the right direction. And that was the experience of us. My sister, when am I supposed to quit, Anthony? I didn't.
One minute.
My sister was at a wedding, and one of her good friends was there, and the good friends was just dumping out her story about their troubled students. They have two boys. And my sister said, your husband needs to call Jeff. And he called me. And by that time, I was actually in a worse situation than they were. They actually had a plan that was working. And I went to the board, and the board contacted that school and adopted the plan that they had. And it's been going very much the right way since that. And that is what my burden is today. And if there's someone here that could think of an idea or come up with a way that would do it, talk to anybody on the CL committee or Anthony or Gerald or myself, and we'd love to brainstorm this with you. So I time with one more wee little story. Two nights ago, my son in Wyoming called me at 2:30 in the morning and said, "Dad, my son," I could hear in the background, my one-year-old son is crooped. I can't hardly get him to breathe. He was sitting out on his porch, 20-degree weather, trying to get this boy so he could get some more oxygen. They had tried steam bath. What can I do? My mind went back 30 years. When I was sitting on a porch in southern Illinois, holding that very dad with doing the same thing. These problems are common to man. They're not unique to me. They're not unique to you. They're common to man. And that the Anabaptists have done very good at brotherhood assistance and at pulling together and helping each other. And that's what the seed I want to plant. May God bless.
Thank you for listening. For additional recordings produced by the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee, visit The Dock for Learning at www.thedockforlearning.org.